A Khatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Khatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
So today, we are definitely strapping in.
We are.
We're tackling a thinker whose name alone, Martin Heidegger, well, it often signals difficulty, right?
Yeah. Mention being and time, and, you know, people tend to picture this incredibly dense, almost unreadable book.
Totally. That reputation isn't entirely unearned, I suppose.
No. But what's really fascinating is what's underneath that intimidating surface. It's genuinely revolutionary stuff.
And that's our mission for this deep dive, isn't it? To show that the core questions Heidegger was wrestling with, they aren't just abstract academic games.
Exactly. They're deeply personal. And honestly, pretty essential for understanding modern life, technology, anxiety, all of it.
Our guide through this philosophical landscape is Michael Inwood's Heidegger, a very short introduction.
Which is surprisingly a really clear pathway into this, you know, 20th century giant. And the main thing driving Heidegger, the central theme, is what he called Die Science Frage.
The question of the meaning of being, with a capital B.
It sounds grand, but think about it. Why does work-life balance often feel like such a struggle, almost inherently flawed?
Or why do we feel sort of alienated by technology even when it makes things easier? Heidegger gets at that.
He argued that Western philosophy, basically since Plato, just stopped asking what the word is actually means. We talk endlessly about things that are
tables, chairs, people, ideas.
Right, but we forgot to examine the isness itself. The very fact of existing.
And Inwood shows how Heidegger kind of flips the whole philosophical tradition on its head.
Instead of starting with abstract concepts or objects,
he starts with us, with you, human existence, because we're the only beings who actually seem to care about being, about our own existence.
And understanding that shift, well, it really shapes everything from modern existentialism to critiques of technology to that constant search for, you know, living authentically.
It's big stuff.
Definitely. So let's talk a bit about our guide here, Michael Inwood.
Yeah, he's not just giving us a simple summary.
No, he's an eminent British philosopher, an Oxford fellow, and he specializes in exactly this kind of notoriously difficult German philosophy, Hegel, Heidegger.
Right, and that background is key. He has this really rare combination of deep scholarly expertise. He knows Heidegger's work inside out, the early stuff, the later stuff, the shifts.
The infamous turn.
Exactly. But he combines that depth with this pedagogical skill. You can tell he's honed it at Oxford. He knows how to make complex ideas, well, understandable.
That's what makes the book so valuable for someone like me or for you listening. He seems to anticipate where you're going to get stuck.
Mm-hmm. He lays the groundwork step by step. It really does feel like a kind of philosophical apprenticeship in miniature.
And importantly, Inwood maintains this intellectual honesty throughout.
Yeah, that's crucial. He's not just a fanboy ignoring the problems.
Nor is he just dismissing Heidegger out of hand. He appreciates the philosophical power.
But he also confronts, very soberly and frankly, the really deeply problematic side. Heidegger's active involvement with the Nazi regime, the Heidegger affair.
Right. Inwood makes it clear you can't really understand the philosophy or the man without grappling with that context. It's unavoidable.
Okay, so let's dive into the book's central premise, the main argument Inwood lays out for us.
It all comes back to recovering that lost question, right? The science frage, the question of being.
Yes. But Heidegger's insight was that you can't just look for being like it's an object somewhere out there.
You have to start with the one entity for whom being is actually, well, an issue.
And that's Dasein.
Dasein. Literally being there. It's Heidegger's specific term for us, for human existence.
So Inwood shows us that to even get a handle on being, we first have to analyze the everyday existence of Dasein, how we actually live.
How we use tools, what our moods tell us, our relationship with time.
And ultimately, how we face our own finitude, our death.
It seems like a bit of a roundabout way to answer, what does is mean, doesn't it? Why not just use logic?
Well, for Heidegger, that's precisely the problem. Traditional logic and metaphysics, they prioritize detached observation, looking at things from the outside.
Like a scientist studying a specimen.
Exactly. Inwood carefully unpacks how being and time introduces these core concepts, things like thrownness or authenticity, not through abstract definitions, but by looking at how we're already engaged in the world.
And the book doesn't just stop with being and time, which is, you know, often where introductions kind of trail off.
No, that's another strength. Inwood maps out the famous Kehr, the turn in Heidegger's thinking later in his career,
where he shifts focus more towards
history, language, poetry, and especially this sweeping critique of modernity and technology.
Ah, the enframing idea.
Right. He starts seeing the essence of technology not just as machines, but as this dangerous mindset, this enframing that changes how we relate to everything. Inwood gives us the whole arc.
Okay, let's try to unpack the absolute core philosophical move here, the ontological difference. It sounds pretty intimidating.
It does, but it's the foundation for everything else. Basically, Heidegger believed Western philosophy forgot a crucial distinction.
Between
beings sciendas and beings sane.
Okay, so beings are just stuff.
Pretty much. All the specific things we encounter. This microphone, your chair, that tree outside, an idea. Those are all beings.
And being, with a capital B.
Being isn't another thing. It's the isness, the condition that allows any being to show up, to be present, to exist at all.
Okay, let's see if I get this. If I hold up my coffee mug, the mug itself is a being.
Right.
But the fact that it exists, the possibility of its existence, its isness, that's being.
You got it.
But why is confusing those two such a big deal? Why did Heidegger think it mattered so much?
Because if you treat being as just another being, maybe the most general or abstract one, you end up reducing reality to just objects that can be measured, calculated, controlled.
Scientific worldview, basically.
Yeah. In a way, yes. Heidegger wanted to reawaken what he called fundamental ontology, a sensitivity to the sheer mystery of existence itself, not just cataloging the things that exist.
And the only gateway into that mystery is us. Through Dasein.
Exactly. The being there. It's the site, or the clearing, as he sometimes calls it, where being can actually show itself, be understood.
But if Dasein is this site, and we're constantly defining ourselves, how do we have any stable identity? You said earlier, existence precedes essence.
That's the radical existential claim Inwood highlights. For us, for Dasein, existence does precede essence. We aren't born like a hammer with a fixed function.
We're not pre-programmed.
No. We are projects. We're always, in a sense, ahead of ourselves, projecting possibilities, making choices, and becoming who we are through those commitments. You're defined less by what you are right now and more by what possibilities you're pursuing.
Yeah. Okay, so that immediately throws out the old picture, doesn't it? The Cartesian idea of a mind, like locked inside a body, looking out at a world of separate objects.
Precisely. That detached subject-object split is secondary for Heidegger. Our primary, most fundamental way of being is being in the world.
Meaning we're already embedded.
Yes. The world isn't just a collection of objects out there. It's a unified, meaningful context. A web of relationships, equipment, purposes that we're already involved in, already understand implicitly.
This is where the famous tool analogy comes in, right? The hammer. Inwood explains this really well.
He does. Think about a skilled carpenter using a hammer. When they're hammering away, absorbed in the task.
They're not thinking about the hammer's properties, its weight, its material.
No. The hammer is in what Heidegger calls the mode of ready to hand zu hand and height. It becomes almost an extension of the carpenter's arm. It withdraws into its usefulness, becomes transparent.
That absorbed practical engagement. That's our primary reality.
That's Heidegger's claim, yes. That's how we encounter the world most immediately and authentically.
But then what happens if the hammerhead breaks off?
Then the flow is broken. The tool is no longer ready to hand. It becomes conspicuous, problematic.
It becomes an object.
Exactly. It shifts into the mode of present at hand or hand in height. Now it's something we stare at, analyze, measure, figure out how to fix. It's an object of theoretical observation.
And Heidegger's point was that philosophy, and maybe Western thought in general, mistakenly took this secondary, detached mode
to present at hand
as the primary way of knowing reality. They focused on the broken hammer, not the hammer in use.
Right. They missed the boat on our fundamental, lived, practical engagement with the world.
Okay, digging deeper now. Inwood talks about these fundamental structures of our existence, things we can't escape, like thrownness, geworfenheit.
Yeah. Thrownness just means we find ourselves thrown into a world already underway.
A specific time, place, culture, family.
A history, a language. None of which we chose.
Right,
that's our starting point, our situation. It's just a fact.
But we're not just determined by that past, are we? There's also projection at work.
Right. Because we're Dasein. We're not just stuck in our thrownness. We are fundamentally future-oriented. We are always projecting possibilities, understanding ourselves in terms of what we can be and do.
We're constantly running ahead of ourselves, choosing directions.
Exactly. And this leads directly to his really revolutionary take on temporality and death.
He doesn't see time as just like TikTok one moment after another.
No, he sees time or temporality as the very structure of Dasein's being. It's this dynamic unity of past, our thrownness, future, our projections, and the present moment where choices happen.
And death fits in how?
Death is the ultimate possibility for Dasein, being towards death. It's the one possibility that is absolutely uniquely ours, non-transferable.
Facing up to that finitude, that's key to authenticity.
For Heidegger, yes. Resolutely anticipating your own death, understanding your finite time, is what liberates you to make authentic choices now, based on what truly matters to you, rather than just drifting along.
Otherwise, you're just sort of frittering it away, lost in the everyday.
Pretty much. Okay, let's try to pull out some core themes, things that really connect Heidegger's sometimes dense ideas to our actual lives.
Okay, theme one has to be that existence precedes essence idea.
Right. We are beings of possibility. We create ourselves through our choices.
So the reflection for you listening is, what are you putting off? What big decision or project are you delaying because you're waiting for, I don't know, the right time or some external validation, some predefined essence to show up?
Heidegger would say, stop waiting. Your existence is your essence being forged right now.
Okay. Theme two, authenticity versus conformity. This is the idea of the they, Das Man.
Ah, yes, the they, the anonymous social world, the way one does things, the pressure to conform.
The inauthentic life, for Heidegger, is getting lost in that, being governed by idle talk.
Just repeating opinions without understanding, gossip, cliches.
And curiosity.
Which isn't genuine seeking, but more like restless distraction, endlessly scrolling, flitting from one thing to the next without commitment.
So the reflection here is, where in your life, maybe social media, maybe work, do you feel pulled towards just performing what one does?
Are you echoing the they self instead of making choices that are truly yours, choices you take responsibility for?
It's a sharp critique. And finally, theme three, the danger of modern technology. This is from the later work, The Care.
Right. The essence of technology isn't gadgets or machines. It's a way of thinking he calls in framing Gestell.
A mindset that basically reduces everything, rivers, forests, animals, even people, to resources.
Exactly. Resources to be calculated, optimized, controlled, put into what he calls the standing reserve B-stand, ready for efficient exploitation.
The river becomes just hydroelectric potential. The forest, timber reserves.
And the really chilling reflection is, are you starting to treat yourself that way?
Yeah.
Is your own body, your time, your sleep, even your relationships becoming just a standing reserve?
Something to be managed and optimized for maximum output feeding into the system.
It's a profound warning about losing other ways of relating to the world and to ourselves.
You know, despite the complexity, Inwood really does manage to surface some core ideas that stick with you. Memorable concepts.
He does. Let's highlight maybe three paraphrase statements that capture the gist. First, the essence of Dasein lies in its existence.
We touched on this. It means the buck stops with you. Responsibility. You forge your identity through choices, not by waiting for some innate nature to reveal itself.
Okay, second, related to the tools. Our primary way of encountering things is not as objects of contemplation, but as equipment we use to accomplish tasks.
This really elevates practical know-how, doesn't it? The carpenter skill, the musician's feel. It suggests that this embodied, engaged knowledge is actually more fundamental than detached theoretical analysis.
Mm-hmm. It gives dignity to craft and skill. And third, from the later critique of technology, the essence of technology is nothing technological.
Meaning the real issue isn't the smartphone or the computer itself.
It's the underlying mindset, the inframing, that worldview of total calculation, optimization, and control that risks shutting out all other ways of seeing and being poetic, mindful, relational ways.
That's powerful stuff.
Yeah.
So how can we actually use these ideas? Let's talk real life applications.
Okay. Application one, navigating anxiety angst.
Which most of us just see as a problem, right? Something negative to get rid of.
But Heidegger reframes it. Angst, for him, isn't everyday fear of something specific, like spiders or public speaking. It's more profound.
It's that background hum of unease.
Yeah, that feeling of groundlessness, the sense that the world doesn't offer inherent meaning or security. But he calls this the call of conscience. It reveals our radical freedom and responsibility.
So the tip isn't to eliminate anxiety.
But maybe to listen to it. When you feel that existential dread, instead of just trying to suppress it, use it as a prompt. Ask. Okay, if nothing is guaranteed, if I'm truly free, what possibility really matters to me right now? What commitment am I willing to make?
Using anxiety as a catalyst for authentic choice.
Yeah, it is. Second application, finding meaning in skill and practice.
In our culture, we often value abstract, managerial, or purely intellectual work more highly.
Right. But Heidegger's focus on the ready-to-hand, on absorbed, practical engagement gives real philosophical weight to craft, to skilled trades, to any activity where you achieve that flow state.
Where the tool becomes an extension of yourself.
Exactly. So a practical takeaway is actively cultivate hobbies or work that involves that kind of deep, embodied, practical knowledge, whether it's coding, gardening, playing music, fixing bikes.
Resisting the push to reduce everything to just abstract oversight or management. Find something where you get lost in the doing.
Mm-hmm. Find the task where the tool just disappears for you.
You know, reflecting on Inwood's book, what really struck me and unsettled me, honestly, was how directly he forces you to confront the link between this incredibly deep philosophy and the absolute political horror of Nazism.
Yeah, he doesn't shy away from it.
And it just hammers home this question. Can abstract ideas ever be truly separated from their real-world consequences, from moral and political responsibility? It's a tough but vital question for anyone engaging with complex thought.
It really is. And I think the final takeaway, the lasting impact of diving into Heidegger, especially with a clear guide like Inwood, is that it fundamentally changes how you question things.
You start seeing the ordinary differently.
Exactly. The hammer, that feeling of anxiety, even just the simple act of saying, I am, it all becomes layered with this sense of mystery, this contingency. It forces you to stop taking the sheer fact of being for granted.
It's definitely a challenging read, even with Inwood's help.
Right.
But the payoff is this transformed perspective on, well, pretty much everything.
It proves his ideas, despite the difficulty, despite the dark shadows, are still incredibly relevant to how we navigate our lives today.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.